Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 33. It's Asian Cinema in a Podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland, aka The Incredible Hunk. Joining me this evening, we have Ken.
AKA.
Ken.
Am I not allowed to be Sleazy Ken during year two of Podcast on Fire?
AKA Sleazy K.
Okay.
Pussy.
And Mike Banner.
Alright, I'll just do it mine.
There we go.
By the way, who named you the Incredible Hunk? Is it your mom?
So guys, movies of the week, what have we been watching? Mike?
Well, I watched Old Boy because you made me. And I watched I tried to watch Phantom Kung Fu, which stars Wong Tao, and I think is a Lee Chow Nam film. But I fell asleep three times trying to watch it. Now, I think that has something to do with the fact that I was like putting it on late at night, and also a little bit to do with the fact that the film seemed a bit crappy. But Chang Yi's in it, who's awesome. Baddie extraordinaire, playing a baddie with a... it's got a very Dean Sheckish kind of look to him in this one, with a big stupid... a little bit more... effervescent. A little bit more ostentatious moustache than Dean Sheck would normally have stuck on his face. But yeah, apart from him, it was not a great film, and I fell asleep a few times, so I didn't actually manage to finish that.
Didn't seem like the excess that this director can bring at the best of times. Just seemed boring.
Well, wasn't it mainly Pop the Call of Vicious or anything like that?
Or Life of Ninja.
To be fair, like I said, I was trying to watch it kind of late at night.
So Ken, what films have you been watching recently?
I'll talk mainly about one, but I'm just going to mention one I watched this Sunday, because I know Mike Banner is a great fan of Ku Peng, great Shaw Brothers actor and stuff like that. But I watched this prison exploitation movie called Jail of No Return from 1994, which you shouldn't expect anything out of. It looked cheap from the get-go, and but it's actually it's good for two reasons. It's shot in sync sound, and it's quite professional for a low-budget male prison exploitation movie, and it has a good supporting act from Ku Feng, which is enhanced by the fact that the movie is sync sound as well. So if you ever can find that movie, The Jail of No Return, it's actually quite a well-made movie for a cheap exploitation movie from Hong Kong. It actually was on Eastern Heroes VHS once upon a time in the 90s. So it was released in the UK, albeit cut by half a minute. It's actually a scene where they shit on camera. Not on the camera, but they film prisoners taking a shit and forcing them to eat it.
Aww.
So I believe that is cut. But Ku Feng is actually very good in this film. It's always a pleasure to hear people in sync sound. So The Jail of No Return, a minor underrated recommendation. But the movie I'm going to talk about is a movie called Millionaire Cop. Again, a comedy from 1992, which has nothing going for it when you read about it and watch the first few minutes. But this rather insane buddy cop movie with Aaron Kwok and Stephen Chow's cohort Mandat is actually one of those Wong Jing productions that benefits from having insane ideas and pace to go along with it. Because you can always do like high-pitched Hong Kong comedy banter and get away with it, so to say, i.e. they can make a movie out of this banter, but dialogue is, you know, a tricky thing to make it work outside of the local cinema, or rather outside of Hong Kong rather. But the reason why Millionaire Cop is so fun is it's fast-paced as hell, and it goes through one insane scene and concept after the other. So basically, the only real way to review this film is to mention a few of these insane scenes. Starting with an early chase scene where Aaron Kwok and his partner are trying to catch a molester that goes around Hong Kong, and they dress up as schoolgirls naturally to lure him out. So Aaron Kwok is dressed as a schoolgirl in this film. That's the most extravagant costume in the film, by the way, from him. He keeps it rather subdued otherwise. They managed to fuck this whole undercover thing up, and Mandat manages to end up in a giant rubber condom that is part of a giant billboard. So he runs through the billboard and ends up in a giant rubber condom. That leads to them aborting this undercover mission for the day, and he goes to the mahjong parlor, and the molester is there. So he takes his chance and cuffs him. The mahjong parlor is interrupted by a gang that is out to rob the place, and in the process, the hand of the molester and the hand of the cop, their hands are cut off. They're actually cut off. It's a gore scene all of a sudden. Cut to. Umandat is home from the hospital. The hand is sewed back on. It's fine. The hand starts doing stuff. The hand starts to try and molest people. Shit, it's the pervert's hand on him. And bear in mind, the movie hasn't started yet. This is just like one insane concept after the other, and it's really, really funny because the pace is right, the energy is right, and the silliness is sort of it's a good silliness and good dumb behavior on screen. Mm-hmm. And when the plot does kick in, it's about a rich man who fears his son is about to be kidnapped, so they make the son take on a different identity, and Aaron Kwok takes the son's identity in order to lure out the kidnappers. And there he meets in the office where the son works, he meets Maggie Cheung's character. And for some reason, whenever she sees any round object, bubble gum, bubble, or what have you, she starts to get really horny, basically.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, it's Maggie Cheung. Classy Maggie Cheung, forced to be in this kind of scene, and therefore her home, when you visit her, her home is filled with no round objects whatsoever.
Right.
Round square oranges, square CDs, Coke cans, and obviously Aaron Kwok does whatever he can to actually get it to be all horny again. I might as well stop there, because the movie is really funny, and it's low humor, but it's one of those times where Wong Jing's stamp on a movie actually is a benefactor, and I quite liked it. It was over really quick. I mean, 90 minutes is an easy enough running time to get through, but a Hong Kong movie that manages to sustain its energy all up till the end is actually quite rare, especially a cheap movie like this. And I should mention, towards the end, Aaron Kwok has a end fight with Hong Yan Yan, the director of the recent, what was it, Cobweb he directed? Mm-hmm. One of the martial arts movies Mike spoke about. But anyway, he has a fight with Aaron Kwok, and Aaron Kwok slowly turns into his character from Savior of the Soul during this end fight. So he turns into the Silver Fox character, if anyone remembers Aaron Kwok from that film. Which is one of those unashamed, surreal moments that just happens. And they acknowledge it also. Oh, I'm Silver Fox. Hey, it's a fun film. Minion, a cop. The VCD is actually out of print. There's no DVD. So I guess you can hunt down VHS and stuff. But, you don't want to pay too much for it. But if you do find it, it's actually quite a fun disposable time at the cheap Hong Kong movies of the 90s, where many movies came out that were the same, but this sort of is a standout. I like it.
Sounds interesting, to say the least.
I didn't know anything of it. I just expected, a grating time.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. It actually ended up quite the contrary.
So for me, I've really been out and about lately, so I've not watched too much, but I did get the chance to watch Fist of Legend, the Dragon Dynasty's release of the film. And it's alright,
You have seen it, yeah, before?
Yeah, I'd seen it before, but I'd only ever seen, well, when it was actually shown on TV over here, and that was the, obviously, the American print, shall we say, where it was dubbed over and certain scenes were cut out. I've not actually looked onto the other disc of the DVD, where I'm sure it does actually contain deleted scenes, but...
I think the movie was uncut, except for the ending. The very, very end was changed. I believe they put a different title card on screen and stuff like that, but the movie otherwise is uncut, the All Dimension movie, although the dub doesn't really do justice to the, like, the quite serious storyline and the between the Hong Kong or the Chinese people and the Japanese. It sort of simplifies it, I've heard, but I haven't seen the dub or that kind of film.
Well, I've never really watched the film since then, because I always kind of was holding out for the perfect edition, and I think the Dragon Dynasty DVD is going to be as close as we can get to like the perfect edition. I'm sure there could be like some sort of fan DVD made, but I probably wouldn't go to the efforts of trying to get a hold of one of them, because this one seems perfectly fine. It's got plenty of features, interviews, deleted scenes, and there's nothing really else you want from that film. It's a good film. Rewatching it, I've gotten a little weary to noticing how some scenes have been cranked up, and I remember watching them the first time and never fully, well, it never put me off. But now it just, like, sometimes it feels a little too fast for a reason.
It's not Donnie Yen on the cranking though.
No, it's not to that stage where he's actually undercranked walking down the street, but it's still, I do think it really needs explained, because surely everyone's heard of Fist of Legend, or at least Fist of Fury, which is the same story. But I do find it quite good how, when watching Fist of Legend and they speak of the character Ho Yun Jai, and then Jet Li goes on to star in the film Fearless, of which is the biopic of Ho Yun Jai, it would be a good thing to do if I played them back to back, watching Fearless then Fist of Legends. Just like, that student looks fucking so much like him. Younger, but...
Chinese people look alike.
Oh,
that cliche is true.
Oh, Lord. But, yeah, I've been rewatching parts of CJ7, because I'm giving someone a borrow of it the next day, and I was just kind of wanting to... It kind of got me in the mood just to flick through it, and with it being a short enough film, I think I watched at least half of it again, and it's still like a real smile-inducing film. Can't help but enjoy yourself when watching that movie. But that's been it for me, really. So on to our first topic of discussion for tonight. It's actually a bit of news recently which has sparked commotion amongst some forums, but for those who aren't aware of it, I'll just read out this headline here. Spielberg, Smith in talks for Old Boy. Pair may kidnap remake of the Korean drama. Steven Spielberg and Will Smith are in early discussions of collaborating on a remake of Chan Park-wook's, wait, got his name wrong, Chan Wook Park's Old Boy. DreamWorks is in the process of securing the remake rights, and the pick will be distributed by Universal. The film, for yous aren't aware of it, there's the 2003 Korean original where a man gets kidnapped and held in a shabby cell for 15 years without explanation. Suddenly he's released and given money, a cell phone and clothes, and is set on the path to discover who destroyed his life and so that he could take revenge. Spielberg has been looking for an opportunity to make a film with Smith, who would play the kidnapped man if all the pieces fall into place. Spielberg is looking for a writer to begin the development process. The film was originally set at U, and... Sorry, I thought that was going to be the age rating. U, like... Wait, that's a children's... That's a children's age rating. No, you can't put this beside, like, the Disney films. But yeah, there's nothing else you really need to know about that, unless you want to know that Spielberg is next expected to direct Tintin. Yeah, I thought so.
Starring, who's starring in that, by the way? Made me curious.
I've not a clue, and I'm not really caring.
Simon Pegg. that was the same person I was thinking about. Who would be Tintin? Simon Pegg.
Get his Tim Bisley haircut back. Perfect. You know, just one thing, right? You called him Chanwook Park there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Whose name would be Park Chanwook, right? See, that always grates with me slightly. That's like a pet hate. Nothing against you, Stuart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I just read it off the Variety website.
Yeah, it's the IMDb thing of
switching the names around.
Yeah. Now, right, is that because, you know, Westerners are too thick to be able to work out that family name starts at the front with, like, Korean and Chinese people?
IMDb are too thick, obviously.
Well, I think it's gotten bigger than that, because now there's no longer the star, like, well, Rush Hour 2 now stars Ziyi Zhang.
Yeah, I've seen it on credits as well, and obviously on Variety and other Western media. You know, mm-hmm. When Brad Pitt's on tour in, like, China or something promoting the film, do they call him Pit Brad? Hey, Pit Brad!
They asked him to adopt, like, Pit a middle Brad. Name as well to make it easier for them.
We're interviewing Pit Brad! No, because people in Asia, people in other countries, names go the other way around. Not me. Mm-hmm. I just find that a grating.
I mean, honestly, I don't keep track of either which is the correct order for the old boy director. How do you say his name?
Park Chan-wook.
It is Park first, okay? Because I have a tough time with that, and don't get me started on Japanese names. I have no idea if whenever I write Japanese names in my reviews, if they are in the correct order. I mean, Akira Kurosawa, of course, I know that, and Takashi Miike, I know that, but, you know... But I guess there's always time to learn, and IMDb certainly hasn't found the time to learn. They have their system set in place with Yunfat Chow forever and ever.
Well, it just sounds like, I reckon, just a slur. You fat Chow. Like, no, you fat Chow.
So that's how it starts.
Yeah.
I hijacked the discussion slightly.
It's fine. But the main point is, what do you guys think of this news? Are you scared? Do you think this is actually going to... I'm guessing this might actually go forward.
It seemed a bit premature the way the article is worded, but I guess considering the names that are attached, it's a good chance, as you say, for it to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just on a technical note, if you look at IMDb, Spielberg's down as directing Tintin.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, and then the year after Lincoln, a biopic of Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
And he's already down as doing a third film. I can't remember what the title of it is. That's also for 2011 or maybe 2012. So if he does get round to doing this, it won't be for a good few years anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking like five years away.
Well, if he's seen as later as director, I mean, it could mean he's producing. You never know.
Mm-hmm. But I think from the initial impression, it's just, no, please don't do this. Because I think it's been many times before, like, this feels like one of the big films that's caused all this controversy about remakes. It's like, oh, they better know they're remaking Old Boy. Oh, wait, yes, they are. And then this is where all the fucking clash of the forums comes up. But...
I like that.
Still, this is... I think there's good parts to this and there's bad parts. Like, the only good part to me is, like, Will Smith is, like, a decent actor, and I would actually like to see him tackle this kind of role, to see how it comes off. But there's so many elements of that film I can never see on American screens, like, an American version of that, without it just being this independent thing that only gets shown on film festival circuits and not, like, wide commercial release.
Yeah, certainly the squid-eating scene and the violence overall, or rather the tone is... I mean, it's a vicious film, obviously.
Yeah.
Daring film in that regard. But I should state, by the way, I I didn't actually like Old Boy as much as the other people did. But obviously I went into it with high expectations, but how could you not? I mean, I saw it a few years after everyone else, but you know, I wasn't hooked all the way through. I actually stopped caring during the ending. I just wasn't hooked as I was supposed to, but I guess maybe a rewatch will change that. I like the concept a whole lot. The basic frame story, but so that's my brief opinion on Old Boy. I like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and JSA much better from the same director.
For me, I kind of just bought it on chance. I think I actually ended up, I made the mistake of cheap on eBay, bought it, and not realising it was actually a really, really good bootleg. But you get that nowadays, they look just too good, and you try to figure out, now I wonder where this could have came from. It's like, nowhere ever sells this kind of DVD. Like, right, bootleg. But it was the film I watched, took into college the next day, gave it to my mate who also had the same interest in the films. He loved it, passed on to the next guy. Basically half my class had seen this film by the end of the week and we all had the same opinion of it. It just like shocked the shit out of us. For all the films I've been watching, I wasn't expecting, well, this. I got total absorbed in it. I was expecting just some sort of violent film, but like, I got caught up in the story. I did have to pause for a cup of tea, but still. That's it. Sure, it's just babbling tonight, that's all.
Might as well move on to the Mike Banner opinion of the film.
Yes.
I'm ready. I've been brewing this up for a while. Now, I've got to agree quite a bit with you, Kenneth. I liked Old Boy, but I wasn't blown away by it.
First half is brilliant, by the way. I was hooked for the entire first half, but it lost me along after that. Maybe it's too long in actuality.
It's a Korean film, they're all too long. For some reason Korean directors can't make a film under 2 hours. They love it. It had lots of really good moments, but for some of it I just wasn't gripped. I just didn't care as much as I'm sure I should have. And I wasn't feeling his feeling for vengeance. Or revenge. But like I said, it did have some amazing moments in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance was very good. But I wasn't totally in love with it. It kind of reminded me of three films, two of which I prefer to Old Boy.
All right.
The first one, it kind of made me... It felt a little bit like Bittersweet Life by the director of Good, the Bad and the Weird and Tale of Two Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Ji-won.
Which, if you haven't seen Bittersweet Life, watch it, it's fucking amazing. I absolutely love that film, and that film had me completely gripped from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, totally gripped by the main character and the situation, and that reminds me as well. There's a fight scene in Bittersweet Life, which is like really raw and gritty, and it's the main character against loads of guys, and it's not highly polished, and it's so intense. And so, you know, white knuckle. And you're rooting for the character that's like, yeah, come on. All the way through. That fight scene's amazing. That's exactly the feeling I didn't get watching the... well, for me, from what I'd read anyway, was fairly well-hyped Clawhammer fight scene in Old Boy. Which I was very disappointed by.
Really?
Didn't do anything for me at all.
I didn't think it was like best fighting I've seen in ages, but I thought it was really well done. I wasn't expecting, well, wire work or CGI, but
I mean, either. I thought it was going to be a brutal and kind of gritty and awesome kind of fight scene.
I do think it's that kind of film where they have to be that sort of shocking with the violence. That shocking violence doesn't have to be in a fight scene, like how you could see later on where there's a point where, I'm spoiling it for people, but it's 2008, you should have seen this film already, Mike. The Clawhammer scene with the guys taped down to the chair, like that violence is taken outside of a fight scene, and that's shocking enough as it is, but when there's the fight scene where is the long stretch corridor. Like, that doesn't need to be to the point where he's got the claw hammer in somebody's gut and he's dragging that body along, stabs him in the eye, drags him along, this, that, and the next thing, ends up skinning him and going him with a couple coats. But I don't think it doesn't need to do that much. But I have seen Bittersweet Life as well, and that fight scene as well is really good, but I reckon I just can't see, it doesn't seem right comparing them.
Well, I wasn't comparing it. It wasn't about a violence issue.
Right.
It was, one, a lot of the people fighting, the gang, were doing some kind of old school kung fu, little bits of jumping up and down and dancing, but not actually getting involved kind of maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
When they're, you know, in old school kung fu, you tend to have like a circle of baddies, a few dance around in the background, and then when it's their turn, they hop in to get whooped. It had a little bit of that feeling for me. And also, it appears the goons go to the, ransacked the WWE big box of 2x4s.
Right.
Every time they hit him with something, it's shattered. Wood doesn't do that. Unless you're using fucking styrofoam. Or, you know, super thin MDF.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't buying it at all. It didn't do anything for me.
Hmm.
It's kind of damage that happens though, whether you like it or not, you know, some things are hyped up, specific scenes, moves and stuff like that, and obviously I knew of that fight beforehand, and it never really got imprinted in my memory in a movie, it came and went in a way, but and then the squid eating scene that everybody was saying was the most shocking shit ever filmed. Maybe I'm desensitized, but he's eating a squid.
Yeah,
that's him eating a squid, and but I guess it has part to do with you're numb after watching too many Hong Kong movies where a lot of animals are slaughtered. But I reckon there are scenes in some other films, like in like the old cannibal films from Italy and stuff like that. That's animal cruelty that I would react towards, being really tough to watch. But that wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned Bittersweet Life because I feel like, visually, stylistically, and stuff, and tonally, it's got some similarities. Old Boy has definitely got some similarities to David Fincher films, especially something like Seven.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely had a feeling that, and it kind of made me think of Saw,
right?
Horror film, because it's like the revelatory ending is so good in Saw that it leaves you with, it's like a recency effect. When you finish watching the film, the ending is so good that you think that was fucking amazing. But actually, if you think back, when I thought back to watching Saw, there were quite a bit that were a little bit duff in that film. But it's all made good by the ending. And I felt a little bit like that with Old Boy. There were patches in Old Boy when I was just a little bit bored. And I felt it was a little bit too slow, and I wasn't really feeling it. But then the ending kind of left me feeling, wow, that was awesome.
I can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of are taken along for the ride again, and hopefully for good reasons. I mean, hopefully a director has earned to have a twist ending like that, and it's not like, let's have a twist ending and manipulate audiences to feel, wow, this was a great ending, and make them forget that they were seeing above average stuff before. I mean, it's a delicate balance to, earn a twist ending like that. And also, in terms of Saw, I don't know if it ever makes sense to have that twist ending. I've never re-examined the film, that didn't make sense to have that twist ending. In fact, it does make sense. I don't remember.
It requires a suspension of disbelief,
sure,
as most big twist endings do.
Mm.
But the ending of Saw works. Doesn't leave. It's not like the ending of Port Tension, aka Switchblade Romance.
Yeah.
You're like, no. That really disappointed me about that film, actually, going off on a slight tangent. that's when a twist ending, it hasn't been earned. With Old Boy, they build it up all the way through, this big kind of mystery and stuff. So when the ending comes, you're like, oh yeah, it all fits together. It brings everything together, and it feels like it's not cheap. It's kind of, they've been kind of toying with you, but for good reason.
Yeah.
Whereas in Haute Tension, the ending doesn't make any sense. So it's a little bit like, I was just fucking with you, mate.
I kind of like that shameless rule breaking in the end, because I like the movie overall. Well, I did like the movie overall after that ending, but I still wholeheartedly agree with you, Mike. Despite, it's a strange thing where you can ignore it and still hail the movie in a way.
Well, yeah, I enjoyed the film. It just annoyed me a little bit. Because it's like, yeah, we've got this great bit of story, this great idea, but we're not actually going to bother to try and link it, or you know, make it work in the context of the rest of the film.
It's almost like Monty Python-esque rule breaking. You know, you just drop a 16-ton weight on the scene and everything is solved.
Yeah. But as for a remake, I can't see it being anything like the original.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many things in that I just don't see either working in a Hollywood film, or working when you get Will Smith and Steven Spielberg making it. There's bits of really dark humour and comedy in it that I just don't think will be there. It's the kind of stuff that you only usually see in Asian films. Well, the one that springs to mind is when Truman's standing with these claw hammer up, and it's like not a freeze frame, but they're both, him and this guy who's sitting on a chair, a good chance of getting a hammer in the head, are both frozen. And then you get this little on-screen drawn on little dotted line that goes ding 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 ding. When it reaches the head destination, which is kind of, you know, funny, but in like a really dark, dude's probably going to get clubbed in the face kind of moment. That's just not going to happen in a Hollywood film. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about the remake idea, I just don't see Will Smith being right for that role at all.
Mm-hmm.
I like Will Smith, but I just don't see it.
Yeah. I was just about to say, he always seems to be like Mr. Good Guy. He's always a good guy in his films. He's never kind of like the bad guy, because in this film he kind of goes from being a drunken arsehole being turned into basically a badass
animal.
Mm-hmm. And there are just parts of me that thinks, I'm not sure if he could do it, and there, that's the part of me that wants to see it. I want to be proved wrong, but God knows.
Yeah, it takes a certain something to, you know, a better character actor to sort of sink into the look and feel of that character and journey of the character. I mean, Choi Min-sik, which is one of my favorite Korean actors, even though I've only seen like 3 movies with him, he's always made an impression on me as a guy who could tackle any role and any emotion. I love him in that movie he did with Cecilia Jung, Phai Lam.
Yeah.
He's great in that. I would rather have a better character actor slated for that role in the American remake. Who that would be, I can't really think of any suggestions now, but Will Smith, I agree, that seems out there. It seems like a box office draw, and Old Boy is not a movie that should be like a box office potential champion or anything like that. It's a movie that might happen to, but it's not made for... It's not made for the commercial side of cinema. Even though in Korea it might have been a hit, I have never read the box office on it, but that's Korea.
The only actor that sprung to mind, and admittedly only I did a little bit like 5 minutes thinking about this, I was thinking James Gandolfini.
Right.
Would be good in that kind of role.
Heavy.
To go from just being kind of like an annoying everyman kind of character, you know, he's just Joe Schlub at the beginning.
Yeah.
To actually becoming some kind of, you know, brooding, kind of, I was going to say soulless, but, you know, really driven and really dark and, you know, full of hate and stuff like that, but also giving it a kind of, you know, a bit of humanity in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And warmth, which is kind of a little bit Tony Soprano-ish.
And that's the thing, you'd sit and watch and it's like, come on, Tony, just whack him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is actually a good suggestion, because you don't need to go with a stereo... Like, when you think remakes, you just think... I always seem to think of somebody that seems just basically the American representation. Like, there'll be this thin white guy, and where, like, I never actually... I'm just simple-minded. I never branched out to think of maybe this person, that like, they don't necessarily have to look like what the Korean actor looked like. It's like, they can, like, the characters could look different. I just need to get out of this, like, mindset. And in that case, I think maybe they should just put Angelina Jolie in there. Forget about being a man, just kidnap a woman.
It was so funny enough, that actually happened relatively recently. Tom Cruise was supposed to be cast in the starring role of this film, and then he had to drop out because he was doing another one, and they cast Angelina Jolie in exactly the same role.
Yeah.
But just changed it to be a woman.
Mm-hmm. Because she is, in fact, scarier than some men.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know she could kick my ass, but... if I was holding, like, a coloured child that she hasn't got yet, I'm sure she'd probably boot the fuck out me and take it.
Hey, have I ever done a... have I ever done a rant about remakes? I think I have, haven't I?
Well, we certainly talked about them, and you have of my opinion, you have of your opinion, and but if your rant you're thinking of is along the same lines as that, we don't know yet.
Well, I think this might be a kind of see previous shows, but I just, you know, people going on, oh no, they shouldn't remake it. Why? I don't see any negatives to this, you know. They remake Old Boy. If it's good, great, we've got two great films. If it's rubbish, oh well, the original's great, this one's shit.
Right.
People who made the original made a name for themselves already and made money from the sales, DVD and cinemas and everything. Then they get to sell the remake rights for a nice chunk of money. And if anything, it brings more light on the original one, because every time they mention it, it'll be, oh, the remake of the Korean film, the remake of the remake. And then it might, you know, I'm sure it'll help people hunt it out. A bit like when Grudge remake came out. I believe, I can't remember where I got this information from, but I believe the sales of the Premier Asian version of Grudge actually went up.
Yeah, man.
With the remake, yeah. That people went out to see what the original was like. So I kind of see the negatives to it.
You turned me around actually a bit during that discussion on a prior podcast. I'm man enough to admit it. But also, you know, it's not that I like see it as, wow, we potentially have two good movies, or in the end, one good movie, one bad movie. Now I adopt a stance which is slightly different, which is, I don't care. Do what you like. Just let me keep the good movie and do what you like. And it's sort of a perverse pleasure in a way, which is why I'm kind of keen to see Old Boy eventually, if an American remake goes ahead, just for the perverse pleasure to see if they, I will know beforehand if it has bad good reviews, but it's kind of along those lines. Because I'm even tempted to see like remakes of The Fog, which didn't get one single good review, remake of the John Carpenter film,
yeah,
which I really didn't like as such, but I just want to see. To see for the perverse pleasure of it all, and so go ahead with it. Just make us keep the original, which has not always been the case at times for movies like Hong Kong movies and stuff. They've been kept off the market. So the initial prospect doesn't really as we discussed, Will Smith and Kevin Spielberg, Steven Spielberg. It's not like gold beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a random thing, you know. You shake your whole your big ball with directors and stars, and you end up with ding.
Yeah.
So like Simon Pegg and Steven Spielberg in Old Boy remake. I mean, okay.
It'd have to be set in Britain, though.
Sorry?
It'd have to be set in Britain, though.
Okay, yeah, maybe that will work then. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess we'll know in like 5 years or whenever it might surface. Your boy remake.
Mm-hmm. I still think they should have just left it with the Korean one and the Bollywood one.
Oh, they did go ahead and do a Bollywood one. I heard of that, but never knew it actually was completed or done.
Yeah, I think it did. It must have got done and released, and now I think I spoke with Mike Leader about it, and he says it is basically what you expect to be, like this dark film with dance scenes.
And 3 fucking hours long, probably.
Well.
Due to that content.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, how do they go to the cinema in India and sit there for 3 hours? Jesus. Good on them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, see, now how did we survive the Lord of the Rings movies?
Well, they were good movies. So I guess that's the answer.
I think I'm most lucky when it comes to 3 hour long films in the cinema. I only ever watch 2 because I sleep in the middle. And I always managed to like catch on. Like, oh, no, miss much. Is like, the film's just finished? Well, so not miss much.
So you're watching 2 towers, then? Ah, they're still fighting. Okay. Still fighting.
Oh, okay. So I think we've all thoroughly discussed the hell out of this Old Boy remake.
I guess our discussion is more mild mannered compared to the forums.
Yeah. We're not up in arms.
No, we don't care.
We can actually sum it down to maybe a thumbs up, thumbs down rating. So what do you give it, Ken? There's no middle thumb.
Yeah, no middle thumb. Okay, thumbs up because I want to see how... I do want to see it, because I do want to see how it ends up. So why not? Go ahead.
Mike?
What, a thumbs up for the remake or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it, give
me
a thumb.
And I'll be the minority and just say thumbs down. I've not got a reason, I just want to spite yous.
Just want to be different.
Question 2 for this evening. What do you think of the movies that usually appear during the Lunar New Year in Hong Kong? I.e. these cheaply, quickly made, often comedies. Back in the day, though, we got action vehicles during this time, such as City Hunter and maybe some Three Brothers movies. My opinion is, they don't really bother me too much. Actually, they're often ignored because they usually are these only made on the quick, but occasionally, I'm sure there's actually quite a good film amongst these. But if we keep getting films like that Himalaya Singh, I shall become quite worried. But it also really kind of depends on the cast, I think, because I'll bet the bullet for Protégé de la Rose Noire. I think that was it.
Yeah, and that's Cheng in a Robin outfit.
it was pretty bad in some spots, but I still actually found myself laughing out on some occasions. So it's 50-50 really. What do you think, Ken?
Well, to briefly just say to uninitiated viewers, and I needed to do this research, I guess the Lunar New Year is set around about 15 days, maybe around end of January, beginning February. Mm-hmm. It's usually around that time, I think it's 15 days. And what is it? There was the Year of the Rat this year, but next year is Year of the Ox. Just for information.
Okay, thank you.
But anyway, yeah, well, very, very welcome, Stuart. This time of year, it's easy to dislike the Lunar New Year in terms of cinema, but because it's a time for shameful, cheap, quickly made, often comedies. Mm-hmm. And but it's easy also to come to terms with the fact that you know there's no art that is meant to be unleashed onto the scene at this time. You know, it's happy feelings, it's stars coming out in droves, which was more true of the 80s and 90s when the stars were still around. There's a heck of a lot of less stars nowadays. So, the romantic comedy usually ends up there. And you may feel that the some of these movies, like when Johnny To makes Lunar New Year film, you may feel like it's a dirty spot on his director filmography thing, but you know, it doesn't really bother me. They are what they are, they are meant to be the way they are, and sometimes, as you said, there are some standouts. I mean, for instance, I looked this up, Dragons Forever was a Lunar New Year film, actually. So I might as well ask you two, when you look at that film, do you feel it's a... Does it have a feeling of, you know, a product of that time of year, or it's really a Hong Kong film of its era that could have come out at any time?
I wouldn't think of it as a Lunar New Year film compared to what we get nowadays, but from the looks of it, I wouldn't have been surprised when it came out, because it doesn't seem to be too fixated on the one subject. Like, this is just basically an all-around action vehicle, which Disney kind of give you the impression is, oh, we're just having a laugh on film for a couple hours. Yeah. Well, another lackluster opinion from Stuart Sutherland.
I can't back this up with facts, but I was under the impression that Dragons Forever wasn't a massive success at the box office.
That was what Wikipedia said said as well. Ironically enough, it actually wasn't.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, probably for the Lunar New Year kind of film, it's not really the right tone for what usually is successful. It's a little bit darker. Jackie's not quite the bouncy playboy in that one, is he?
No, he's just playboy. No bounce.
Yeah, not bouncy, happy Jackie. He's just, yeah, slick lawyer playboy. Yeah. See, now, off the top of my head, if I remember rightly, the Lucky Stars films and Lunar New Year ones, aren't they?
Yeah, they're ones I would more...
Winners and Sinners, mm-hmm. Twinkle Lucky Stars. Now, those are more what I'd think of Lunar New Year films.
Exactly.
And from the 80s, especially. And Dragons Forever is quite a bit more serious and a bit more badass than those ones. Those films are kind of lots of silly... Wong Jing-esque like comedy with some badass Samo fight scenes thrown in at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Rich Mew and Samo and other people prattin' about. Moderately entertaining, you know. Nothing too heavy. Bit of action, bit of comedy. Mm-hmm. Bit of romance.
Which could have worked at any time of the year, really. That concept or that recipe, at least during that time.
Mm-hmm.
They could have released it during the summer with same cast and same content and still probably had a decent run at the box office.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, nowadays I think the box office returns are low for the Lunar New Year films. And they aren't as, you know, the focus isn't as great as, you know, when they made movies like Eighth Happiness with Chai Fat and Cher Chung and Dodo Sheng and Jackie Chung and everybody,
mm-hmm.
which is one of my favorite Lunar New Year comedies, because it mainly because of a really manic Chai Fat performance.
Yeah,
all around stupid film, but I liked it. It's likable to see that many stars when you had stars. Nowadays it's not, you know, they made this movie It's a Wonderful Life, I believe it was this year, with Ronald Cheng and a few other people, and you know, the people that are active in the industry today are in it, but it's not, you know, admittedly it's not a star showcase as it used to be, because, you know, as I said, the percentage of real stars are low nowadays. So, but yeah, I like that, and also recently I liked Fantasia by the Himalaya Singh director, Wai Kar Fai, the Lunar New Year film he made before Himalaya Singh, the year before. Fantasia is a fantastic film. Fantastic right. fun. It depends, though, how you do need to watch some movies before, like some the Hoi Brothers movies are good warm-up for Fantasia, because there are really they really are based around those. I mean, Lau Ching-Wan plays the Michael Hoi character from The Private Eyes, and Jordan Chan is the Ricky Hoi character, and Francis Ng is the Sek King character from Private Eyes. Mad fun. And Chinese Feast, Once Upon a Time in 1995, that was great. Found the Choi Hark film. you know, you can put effort in when you make cheap fun. And the Chinese Fee certainly is that. And bad examples, I guess, All's Well Ends Well 97 with Stephen Chow. All
right.
Quite forgettable. And Gorgeous, I guess, is a movie with mixed opinions. But that was a Lunar New Year film, as it turned out. Not too surprising.
For me, I like, you know, usually kind of actiony thrillers, gangster films, that kind of stuff, and kung fu films and action and stuff, and darker films. That's not kind of the shit you're going to get at Lunar New Year, is it? It's like you know, Christmas time at the cinema in America or Britain or whatever. You're going to be full of kids' films and lovely family fun time, which I like sometimes, but it's not generally what would be on my radar of things to watch.
But then we get Fatal Moves this year, or Fatal Contact, the Sammo Wujing film.
I don't remember when it was released, to be honest. Might have been during that time.
I had a thought that that came out then.
But it's a thing, actually, because the box office returns are lower, that then they don't perhaps focus as much to put out, you know, happy, cheery films during the Lunar New Year. They just treat it as
other times.
Exactly. I mean, if people aren't going, let's just unleash whatever we like, even if it's hard hitting and dark and violent and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's just put this puppy to sleep and move on. Okay, Mike, we'll hand over to you.
Puppy killing? You sound like Sleazy K.
Come on.
Nah, I would never go there. I would never go there.
Shoes out on his own.
Trust me.
So, handing over to Mike for what? Explain yourself, go on, Brains. You're supposed to be the...
Well, Mike, if you actually looked up the script, your segment's now.
Yeah, I know my segments now, but I'm waiting for you to introduce it.
No, I can't say that.
With proper music and orchestration and...
Fuck that, you ain't getting any of it.
Alright then, you are, you're going to edit this in. I'm going to do a... Stu did a survey on the site. Might as well plug that while we're here. Do the survey, bitches. So that, you know, the great minds behind POF, you know, the statistic monkeys, can sit there trawling through it to find out what people like and don't like. And after, you know, we've had a poll through, there's been...
We decided to eject Ken from the show.
Doo-doo.
Of course not. There's been overwhelming demand for more lists after I did a couple of lists on my... on my Can Mike Fill 30 Minutes of Airtime show. Let's throw a couple of lists in, show. So yeah, backed by popular demand is a top 10 list. slightly randomly, although this is connected to the band segment, which Stu used to run, of banning himself from buying DVDs until he'd watched all the ones that he owned. That was the general gist, wasn't it, Stu?
Yep, and you seem to be taking it the opposite route.
Yeah, well, I was gonna take it over, and I did well by not buying anything for quite a long time, but also, unfortunately, didn't watch anything for quite a long time, so that to watch pile didn't actually really get any smaller. And then my girlfriend went to Hong Kong, and I started getting back into, you know, getting a bit more drive back to watching some Asian films and all that, and so I bought loads. So in the past couple of weeks, I kind of, you know, I fell off the wagon hard, and I've traded about a dozen and bought about 30, and probably going to buy a few more.
Well, it's good that you admitted, anyway. I'm probably going to buy a few more.
The Stu suggested doing a top 10 films that I've bought that I'm looking forward to watching, which is an unusual top 10 list, but let's go with it. Gives me more airtime, so fuck it.
Exactly.
So, Stu, start music now. And you two can, you know, don't start the music yet. Start the music. You two can, you know, interject whenever you want. Fancy talking about a film.
I would like you to say the name for this segment, albeit in shortened form.
Yes.
Well, I've actually got the script because I closed the page because there was weird.
Yeah, well, how are you getting that?
Sound stuff, so I can't see it. Unfortunately.
There we are. Please read out for our listeners at home.
I mean, McCrew was so popular. I mean, this should have a proper name.
He bought and he's looking forward to watching.
AKA.
Which seems to be AKA'd as MT1. MTHBAILFTW.
Exactly. Rolls off the tongue.
MT, we'll probably have to look.
It's MT1, Myth, Bail, FTW. I just noticed how it's got bail, then FTW, which is almost an internet term, is for the win. So bail for the win.
Get that on some t-shirts. Those fuckers will sell like hotcakes over Christmas.
It looked like the missile codes from War Games.
Anyway. Right then, Stu, start the music.
Okay.
Number 10, Fate of Lee Khan. Directed by King Hu and starring Angela Mao.
And masterpiece.
Number 9, King Boxer, aka Five Fingers of Death.
Also very good.
Starring Lolit. Number 8, Shaolin Plot. Starring Chen Xing, who was the awesome monk in Iron Fisted Monk. Not Samo's character, obviously. And also features Samo doing action choreography and featuring in the film. As, well, you know, relatively little known, Shaolin Plot was actually on the list of films that Hong Kong Legends were planning to remaster and re-release, but they never got round to doing it. Number 7, Book of Heroes. That's got Yasuaki Kurata, Yukari Oshima, and is a kind of comedy, supposedly a little bit grating, but full of amazing stunts and fights. And Osham is one of my favourites, and Karata. And the director
by Island of Fire, yes.
Well, I was about to say, no, actually, for the same director as the guy who did Kung Fu Dunk very recently with Jay Chou.
Exactly, and Island of Fire, and Golden Queen's Commando, and Pink Force Commando, and Fantasy Mission Force for all Jackie Chan fans out there.
Number 6, Black Belt. A Japanese film about karate, which I actually don't really know anything about except for reading some of the review on FarEastFilms.com. Plug. I say some of the review because if it's a film I think I'm going to be interested in, I tend to try and skip as much of the general details of plot and everything so that I don't spoil anything for myself, because I like to know as little as possible, just a kind of flavour of what kind of film it is and if it's any good. And Black Belt looks very, very good indeed. Number 5, My Mighty Princess, from the same director as My Sassy Girl. Korean rom-com with some kind of kung fu action in it. A girl who the main woman in it was also in Volcano Hot.
Right.
The Korean film, but really solid in UK, not from Eurasia. Number 4, Vengeful Beauty. The third sort of in a Flying Guillotine trilogy, Shaw Brothers film, starring Chen Ping and Yue Hua. I don't know. I've heard quite a few reviews saying it's not very good, but for some reason, I'm really keen to see it.
Who doesn't like a flying guillotine?
Indeed. Well, I hear it doesn't make much of an impression. It doesn't feature much in the film, but just one of those films that I happen to be dead keen to watch. Number 3, Cutie Honey. A Japanese film with Erika Sato, based on a manga about some chick in a pink outfit beating up baddies and stuff, kind of fantasy superhero stuff. Honey Flash, looking forward to that one. Number 2, Naughty Boys. Sounds a little bit gay, but it's not. It's an 80s action film starring Mars, who's a longtime member of the Jackie Chan stunt team, and
Clarence Fock kind of actually stars in that.
Whatever.
The director of Naked Killer.
down as Clarence Ford as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Mars was more of a cameo-y kind of person. The one film I can remember him starring in where he had a really good role was Dragon Lord with Jackie Chan, which is a good film, and he's very good in that. But the film also features Lo Mung, Phil Coe, Cara Hoy, Billy Lau, and Karina Lai. So it sounds like a good cast.
And Jackie Chan action.
Stunt action by the Jackie Chan stunt team. And I've heard that it's the stunts and everything are excellent, isn't it?
It is actually. It's a crap film, but very good action. Actually, great in-form comedy, excellent action, great warehouse finale.
Number one, Angry Ranger, starring Ben Lum, and also choreographed by Jackie Chan and his stunt team. I believe. I was going to back that up, saying it was around the making of Police Story, or at least one of the Police Stories.
Nah, this is later. This is 89 or 90, Angry Ranger.
Police Story 2?
3?
I did say one of the Police Stories.
Well, not First Strike, anyway.
Anyway, it's actually... Well, I know Jackie Chan's stunt team, but Jackie's actually choreographing quite a bit of it as well himself. Mm-hmm. Not just down to the stunt team. And supposedly, I haven't seen it yet, but the action's supposed to be superb. Also directed by Wang Lung Wei, aka Johnny Wang, who's one of my favourite villains from the Shaw Brothers.
I'm interested in seeing that one as well.
I've just been waiting for a good version to come out, and finally it's on DVD, so bingo bango. That's my top 10 done.
It's a hard-hitting film. It's not filled with, you know, smooth ballet looking kung fu. It's, you know, a hard hitting Jackie Chan choreographed movie, so you know, it's pretty brutal, and Johnny Wang as director seemed to lean towards directing brutal stuff. I mean, he did City Warriors and Escape from Brothel as director, and not by any means cheery films. Quite dark violence in all of them, so I guess that was his frame of mind as filmmaker too.
And Hong Kong Godfather, which I haven't seen yet, but it's being released by Momentum, is it?
Yeah, it's a Shaw Brothers film, that, yeah.
Yep, it's been released in the US on in March next year on DVD for the first time ever, and on Blu-ray as well.
Oh,
lots of Lung Kar Yan chopping people up with a machete.
And that was one he directed at Shaw Brothers, John Wang?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so end the music. And now we hand it over to Ken.
With no music during this end. Maybe that would distract, or maybe it would benefit the segment. Who knows? Because it might drown out the actual segment content.
What does Smut actually sound like?
Well, it's not Smut, actually. The underrated movie of this week, and I've chosen one that is actually available. One of the feedbacks we got from the anniversary show was that some people would like to know where they can get these crazy underrated movies. Or if they're not crazy, maybe these dramatic and felt underrated movies or funny underrated movies. And this 2007 movie called Magic Boy is well available on DVD, and I was keen to watch it after seeing the director's first film called a little independent movie called When Beckham Met Owen, which is, you know, a standout title in a way, and it in that movie, you know, it doesn't have David Beckham or Owen, but kids that are infatuated with football. But in actuality, in that movie, When Beckham Met Owen, it actually concerns, and this is not sleazy at all, kids sort of experiencing their sexuality awakening and perhaps homosexuality and being confused about that and stuff like that. And it's a good drama. It's a fun, sparkling film. And Magic Boy therefore takes a logical step, because this director, Adam Wong, he centers around youth romance again, but now it's teenagers, and with sort of a different perspective. It's about a young magician played by An Jo Leung, who's in actuality a young magician, and he delivers takeaway for a living and always stops to put a smile on his environment via his magic tricks. But he's not setting any goals yet, you know, making a career as a magician, but he instead wants to woo a sales girl Wing, basically by bothering her every day he delivers food to her. When he eventually wins her over, his Lego's friend Hei, played by Choi Tin Yao, one half of Shine Boy Duo?
Oh, right, yeah.
I was about to say Shane, but I guess it's Shine. this character actually has magic as his trade. He's actually advanced in his career. And when this sales girl gets a look at him, she starts to be a little bit confused about who she wants to be with and stuff like that. And it sounds like a young, sweet romance with no really, you know, memorable qualities, and in a way it's true, but I'm delighted by the way Adam Wong directs his movies because he does it with a playful sense. He has a thing for visuals, but just a playful sense is really the key, and also he does inject a notion of reality to the proceedings, because as I described, the two male characters have made choices and one has not made a choice. And what consequence will that have on life? You know, how long can you basically play around? And it's a delightful film. It is. It's not a downer in any way, and delightful and suitably deep film with, you know, some subtle character depth. If you want to take it, it's there. And a decent little love triangle, made independently, shot on video, but shows that, again, the thing I'm always promoting is the small Hong Kong, the little Hong Kong movie, the local Hong Kong movie with the local flavor. This certainly has meets every criteria in that regard. And he is being noticed, Adam Wong. He was nominated as Best New Director at the Hong Kong Film Awards this year. Unfortunately didn't win. I think Daniel Wu won for his mockumentary The Heavenly Kings, is that it? which isn't undeserved as such. I think that was, you know, a fun mockumentary, but keep an eye out for Adam Wong, and I wholeheartedly recommend Magic Boy, cheap DVD, and again it's available, and also pick up When Beckham Met Owen. Yeah, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised if you allow yourself to be into the small Hong Kong movies. They are delightful films, not heavy to get through, you know, tough to get through. But again, it's all a matter of preference. If you only prefer action out of Hong Kong cinema, then obviously there's nothing for you there.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention, actually, Eric Tsang has been the producer on Magic Boy and When Beckham Met Owen, so he's obviously one that continues to support the new talent in Hong Kong, including also Derek Kwok, who we've spoken about a few times, director of Pie Dog and The Moss.
Mm-hmm. Okay, going on to our plug-in for this evening. We'll let Mike go first.
I ain't plugging nothing.
Ken?
You should know by now which sites to visit.
Okay, it's down to me. I'm going to plug our survey we're actually doing. Like, how could this amazing podcast get any better? Well, it's up to you to decide, really. Okay, right. I deserve that one. But go onto our homepage, podcastonfire.com, and look for the topic titled Podcast on Fire Survey. And it's also accompanied by a picture of Garfield sleeping and eating. Deacon. It seems suitable. So, it's got the direct link to our survey from there. It's like 9 questions. It shouldn't take any more than 2 minutes. And yeah, just do that, because some of these opinions that have been sent to us have actually taken effect already. We now have direct links from our homepage to our forum, which I think we actually really needed, but I had someone had to actually wait for someone to tell me to do it. So now you can get direct links to our forums. There's no excuse for you not to join now. Other websites for you to visit, shelflifecloven.com. We've mentioned them before. They do a great range of clothes which actually kind of represent films of the Far East. And also, for all you guys down in England, there's actually going to be a Hong Kong Film Day in London next March. And yeah, this they're actually putting three films back to back. You're getting to see a day's worth of Hong Kong cinema. You're getting Prodigal Son shown in the morning, Police Story 1, and then followed by Police Story 2. I think it's roughly from 10 in the morning to 5 at night, and I think it's all been set up by the people over at Jade Screen Magazine, also known as Screen Power. Now, we've got a post of that on our forum, but I'm actually going to put this direct link into our show post, so you could go onto their website, purchase tickets. I think there's something around the £20 mark, and you just to contact them at office@jade-screen.com for more information. So, I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart the Incredible Hunk Sutherland.
Sleazy K.
Mike.
And we'll catch you next time. Of course. So, our second question for this evening.
Wait, I guess. Want to be different to the rest of the world, don't you?
What are you starting with now? I'm trying to run the show here, and you're trying to wind me up. No, you wound me up. I'm up now, right? What you want, Banner? What you want?
No, I'm just saying, you want to be different. That's why you like it.
You got a rant?
Got a rant, Mike.
Give me your best rant.
I want to get on with this show so Ken could get out, but no. Banner, no. So, question two for tonight. Oh, I thought I was going to actually get away with talking about that, but I cracked. Okay. Fuck, now I actually need to put in editing points.
Banner!